This is Guitar Talk.
To me, it just seems like there are endless possibilities.
One of the things I like to find out, you know, how people got influenced into playing the guitar, because stories are so unique.
The trick is not to feel pressure to conform.
If you know anything about Joel, he's been around the block. He's probably one of the most sought-after guitar players.
How would you create that song? How would you turn that song into your song?
There's not a guitar player on this planet that I personally don't follow closer. It's not something that you see too often. I only know a few players that do it.
Now, from the home of the blues, Chicago, Illinois, welcome to Guitar Talk with your host, Jimmy Warren.
All right, everybody, Jimmy Warren here. Welcome to Guitar Talk. Thank you so much for tuning in. We have an outstanding show for you today. I mean, I'm all stoked, man. I got the show going on. This is a really cool interview, really great band, and I am preparing myself emotionally and mentally for Nashville NAMM coming up, leaving tomorrow for that, and equally as enthused for the opportunity to hang with Brent Mason on Thursday night at Third and Lindsley. That's going to be a great show. Possibly hanging with Larry Carlton on Friday at the Franklin Theater. Man, I am on fire, man. It's red hot. What else is red hot is that the fact that Guitar Talk is brought to you today by Charlie and John's hand-wound USA made guitar strings. I tell you what, I use them myself. They are long lasting. They sound vibrant. One of the best strings that I've ever used in my entire life. It is a premium made string. You'll notice the difference. That's charlieandjohns.com. Also, we're brought to you by GuitarsForVets.org. It's an organization that helps U.S. veterans with PTSD through the gift of guitar and music. I'm proud to be an ambassador for Guitars for Vets, alongside with great players like Tommy Emmanuel and Scott Ian and Sully Erna and many, many others. To find out how you can help and donate to help a veteran with PTSD through the gift of guitar, you'll go to guitarsforvets.org. Now, today, you know, I've got a young player on the program with a young band that is up and rising. I mean, these guys are really, really good. Now, I don't know how you feel about, you know, different genres of music, but this is country rock, and it's just flat out friggin' hot. And I'm talking about John Jeffers from the band Whiskey Myers. I had a great conversation with him. I absolutely loved it. He was an absolute pleasure to talk to. I can't wait till they get to Chicago because I'm looking forward to seeing this band live. They look like they'd be a lot of fun. Great, great music for sure. So without further ado, I'm going to shut my hole and I am going to get right on to it, right? With John Jeffers of the band Whiskey Myers, right here with me, Jimmy Warren, on Guitar Talk.
What's going on?
Hey, man.
Looks like a nice sterile environment. Must be a hotel room.
Sterile. How are you?
I'm good, man. Where are you guys at?
We're in Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's hopping there.
Yeah, it is. Where are you
at? Outside of Chicago.
Chicago?
Yeah. I was looking at your calendar. You guys seem to have quite a few dates. You're back out there right at it, huh?
Yeah, oh, for sure. We had one to begin with in Texas, and then we got after it the next week, for sure. We took this tour with, we're actually on tour with Jamie Johnson right now.
Oh, very cool.
And he had asked us to be with him about probably 2 years ago. Yeah. And we'd taken the tour and it just, you know, the rest is history, just now getting on that tour.
Yeah. That's really cool. It's really cool. It's nice when you can hook up with somebody, you know, that you're, you know, kind of compatible with, you know.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Cool. His fans are pretty open to us too. Us being more rocker and he's more country, they're still open to it, you know?
Right. Well, yeah, you know, the country, it seems to swing in so many different directions these days.
Everything does.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Everything does. Let's talk about you a little bit. You know, of course the band's great. We'll talk about the band, but I'm interested in you as a guitar player as well. In that, one of the things that I know about you is that you're really kind of versatile. You can play slide, you can play lap steel, you can play a little bit of everything in that. And so I'm kind of curious as to, you know, what some of your early, inspirations or influences were.
Yeah, man, my dad actually taught me how to play whenever I was actually myself and Cody, Cody Cannon, the lead singer. Cody had brought over a guitar and I'd always heard my dad had played, but he didn't have one. I never saw him play. You know, I heard stories about my mom and dad, and, I was about 17 and I didn't have any clue that dad had played my whole life. You know, I kind of played sports and I was zeroed in on sports. So my parents kind of just let me do that thing. Yeah. And then as soon as that guitar came around, it just came out of me and it came to life. And it was pretty natural at first. And then I started hearing the rest of the story about my mom being in bands and I got to see pictures and all this. You know, my dad was a songwriter. It was kind of, I don't think it wasn't withheld on purpose from me, but it was just, you know, that was the direction I wanted to take was sports. And they just let me go in my direction. You know, as soon as music came about, they sent me towards music too, whatever I wanted to do. But influence wise, you know, old records, classic rock records were always on. Zeppelin was a big influence to me. Whenever I remember being, you know, I had heard A Whole Lot of Love a million times throughout my life growing up, but it really didn't get me till I was about 11 years old. And I heard that lead one more time and I was like, okay, I get that now. That's really cool. I think, you know, that's something that's really cool. I understand what my dad's been showing me for a long time.
Yeah.
But, you know, all the classic bands, you know.
Yeah. Was there other outside influences though as well? In different genres, you know, like some people grew up and they got other family members, like an uncle that was in a country band or, you know, a cousin that, you know, did something else or somebody was a closet smooth jazz guy or whatever it was. Did you have those kinds of influences too? Or was it pretty much just a straight rock?
I didn't, man. That was it. And, you know, I figured out that my grandpa played and, you know, he used to play more Hawaiian music and he's got an old, a 1944 J45 Gibson, which is a really immaculate scratch-free guitar. But, you know, there really was no outside influence that came in. I guess it's just how I wasn't raised in the music. So I've never been indulged in somebody else's music. You know, I've never really been I don't really idolize anybody. I never really have. I've always just kind of stuck in my lane and tried to create my own stuff and, you know,
yeah.
Of course, I do look up and idolize, like playing with the Stones. Of course, that's an idol, you know. But right. I've never been so indulged into somebody else's music. I never really have had that.
Yeah. So even now, today, would you say that you don't really pay attention to a lot of what other people do? I mean, like somebody like myself, I follow a lot of guitar players. You know, period. Just because I absolutely love the guitar, so I love the influence, different influences. But you know, I know there's some guys out there, you know, that's not their thing. They like certain things, but they're not that deep into it.
Right?
Are you that deep into the guitar, or is it? Do you view it as just something that you really enjoy doing, and it helps you make a living?
No, I'm definitely deep into the guitar. Yeah. I just don't look at others and try to emulate. You know, yeah. And I think that's not only my own. Not only my view, but I think that's our band's view too. You know, we take that for our songwriting and how we play and how we put together our show and our transitions and all that. You know, of course, you know, everybody kind of grabs from other bands and you do cool stuff, but I've just never really indulged myself into somebody else's so much and try to emulate them, you know, but that didn't mean I don't take guitar playing seriously. Of course, I definitely indulge in the guitar for sure.
Right. Well, you know, I found out that a lot of people that are great players or people that go on to be great players, you know, are people exactly like you. You know what I mean? They understand the influence that other people have. You know, they grasp the inspiration, but they're totally creative on their own. You know what I mean? Like you're trying to carve out
who you are, as opposed to, you know, trying to be the next, you know, whoever, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I've never really, you know,
yeah,
I don't think I've ever really spoke to anybody about it besides you. This is the first time I've spoken about that. So, but yeah, that's how I feel for sure. You know, yeah, maybe one day I can be classified as one of those guys. I think I got a long way to go, but that would be cool.
Well, you never know, man. You might get 40 years down the road and, you know, another person like myself will interview you and you'll be an inspiration to, well, you know what? The truth is, let's just say this. Even now, you got to know that there's young people out there that are paying attention to you. You know, they love your music. They love what you guys are doing. And so there's young guitar players out there that are looking to you, you know, for, you know, I don't want to say they idolize you or anything like that, but they're definitely looking, you know, to you for some sort of guidance, if you will.
For sure, man. For sure. Yeah. You know, and I looked that way too. I just didn't really have anybody to turn to at the time. You know, there was no, I wasn't in the grasp of going to concerts. I lived out in the middle of the sticks in Mont Alba, Texas, you know, the closest thing to us was 3 hours away going to Dallas. And, you know, we were pretty poor growing up, so we didn't go to Dallas too much.
Right.
So I totally agree. People do. And now, you know, now age and time, you get to be seen a whole lot more. So,
yeah, I think one of the things that I love the most about this period of time, you know, speaking as somebody who was, you know, at Van Halen's very first concert in Chicago and stuff like that. But this period of time, there are so many bands like yourself. I mean, what I mean by that is young bands that are really, really good that have kind of diverted back to, you know, just some good rock music.
Agreed.
You know what I mean? And man, my hat's off to you for doing that, because that's one thing I can definitely say about your band is that it reminds me of, you know, the days in the 70s when music was just good. It was just cool, you know, and it was guitar driven in a lot of ways. And, you know, we went through such a long period where we didn't have that.
Agreed, man. Agreed. Thank you for that compliment. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you guys, you know what, you're going to look back, you know, 10 years from now, and you're going to look at where you are as compared to where you were in this sterile hotel room that,
yeah.
Right.
COVID free signs everywhere. The remote control's clean.
Yeah. So when you were young, did you get involved in taking lessons, or are you pretty much self-taught?
No, pretty much self-taught. My dad, you know, he taught me as much as he could teach me until we met the other guitar player, Cody Tate, and he was better than Cody Cannon and myself. And he kind of taught us more. And we just built it. And then we just built the band, and we were just very band oriented. So it took us, you know, we just took gradual steps up and up and just got better and better and practiced. And, you know, we practiced more as a group than we did individually.
Yeah.
And we lived together for years, you know, so we were always practicing in the garage.
Yeah. See, that's really cool. You know, there's a lot of bands that don't get the opportunity to do that, you know, to be in that kind of situation. And I find that the bands that, you know, like you probably know the guys from Blacktop Mojo.
They're actually from our neck of the woods.
Yeah. I mean, they all live together, you know, they all, you know, they take a lot of influence from one another and shut out the rest of the world. That's really cool.
Yeah, man.
So you learn to play slide and you learn to play lap steel. I mean, you just come up with that all on your own. Just I'm going to learn how to do this and just did it.
Yeah, I just saw a 46 Gibson Century 6 lap steel hanging on the wall at a local music shop. I was like, that looks cool. How much is that? $500? And then just learn how to play.
Yeah.
And the slide, I always wanted to be a slide player. So, you know, Derek Trucks, of course, I do look up to Derek Trucks. If you play slide, I'm sure you do. But, you know, he's a different story. He's a different breed of slide player. But, you know, we had Dave Cobb produce two of our records, and he really helped me with the slide. He gave me a really rough time on the slide. So he really helped me. You know, we even had to like tape strings up so I could play it better, but he gave me such a rough time. It really helped me a little bit. So, and all the guys like, oh, this sounds like a slide song. So John, you should play the slide. And it's like, well, I'm not very good at the slide. So eventually, if you keep saying, John, play the slide, eventually you just got to learn how to play it. You know what I mean?
Right. No, I think that's good. You know, I think it's really important as a guitarist, you know, to be well-rounded in a lot of ways, you know what I mean? To be able to, and that's another one of the reasons that it's really good to have so many different influences.
Right.
Because those things help make you a rounded person, you know what
they
I mean?
They do. Yeah, yeah. As musicians, man, if you get stagnant, you know, if you get, we don't like being stale or stagnant. You know, you can only do one thing for so long, and it's like you can try to master one thing. Well, you can't master the guitar, first of all, you know, but like, if you just get stale for too long, you get like, dude, let's find something new. You know, half of our songs were born from, we didn't know how to play in different tunings. So we're like, okay, let's look up some tunings. It's like, what is Model G? And, you know, I've wrote like 4 or 5 songs in Model G because I've tuned it one time and it was like, that sounds cool. Wrote a couple of songs in the tuning, you know?
Yeah.
And then before you know it, everybody's, you know, it's everything's kind of pretty grassroots effect for us. It's just like, pick it up, learn it, do it, fly by the seat of your pants.
And that's probably why you've had some of the success that you've had, you know, because, you know, when you're creative like that, when you're hands on and creative like that, and let's face it, you know, listeners are looking for originality, right? Nobody wants, you know, if they want to hear Tom Petty, well, then they'll listen to Tom Petty on their, you know, on their stereo or whatever, you know what I mean? Want something original, and by being able to incorporate all the different aspects you do, you know, it's cool. Because when you look at guitar players, like, let's face it, guitar players like David Gilmour, right? A lot of people would say, okay, well, David Gilmour's kind of a one-trick pony. His sound is the sound, and that's that. But when you really tear down everything that the guy can do, it really goes into, well, he can play slide, he can play lap steel, he can literally do it all.
Yeah, agreed.
And that's what helped him, you know, be as successful as he has.
The creativity, whenever you expose yourself to being vulnerable, if that makes sense, like if you expose yourself to sucking, you know, then the creativity can come out, you know, it comes out of nowhere.
Right.
So sometimes you got to suck to get better, I guess.
That's it right there. And so let me ask you this then. So when you're playing live or even in the studio, do you take risk or do you map everything out?
No mapping out. No, we don't do that at all. No charts, no maps, everything's by ear. And definitely take risks, you know, because we can always do another take. And a lot of that's the good thing about nowadays and times. But if you're not taking risks, man, then you're not, you know, you're going to sound the same like you sounded on the last record.
Right.
You got to jump out there and be vulnerable.
Now, what about live? You know, like when you listen to an album and you hear the guitar solo, okay, that's it. And when you go see a band live, some guys will do that same solo or something really close to it because that's what the fans are expecting. And then there's other people that will just, this is a live thing, so I'm going to give you what I got tonight.
Yeah, I tend to stay close. I land around enough to give you the lick that's the noticeable one, but everything else is free game live. It's go off, do your own thing. There is no rules when it comes to the guitar leads. It's like, go for it, man. You know, and we have extended versions. We don't do, everything we do live is just not what you hear on record. Yeah. We try to capture that, but there's just something, the energy live, just it's not the same thing, you know?
Yeah, when you pretty much choreograph everything down to the note, you know, it's difficult, you know, to have that interaction, that experience musically with the other people on stage.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. It's
you're feeding off of one another. You're just going crazy, having a good time. And
feeding off the crowd. You're feeding off one another. Everything changes. You know, stuff, nothing goes the same, you know. It's magic.
Just get locked into that conversation between instruments, you know.
Yeah, and when you reach there, it's euphoric, man. It's whenever you get in that, it's one of the coolest moments in the world. When everybody, the crowd, the stage, you know, whenever everybody's locked in, it's beautiful.
Yeah. So let's talk about your gear a little bit. You know,
Yeah, you know? I've got a the guys are actually doing sound check. I wish we could have set it up a different time. So all my guitars are on stage right now, but I'm in the hotel room. But yeah, right now I'm running a I use Vox AC30 hand wired. I've got two stacks with Blue Al Nico speakers in them, and I run pretty much all Gibsons. I use a lot of Les Pauls. I just got a new 335 Gibson 335. It is a Black Beauty special.
Oh, okay.
Which only made a couple rounds of those in 2018, I believe.
Yeah.
So I land around all Les Pauls and SGs, all Gibsons, man.
Yeah. So do you got an endorsement with them at this time?
We've worked together quite a bit, but we're not fully involved. I got a meeting with them actually Thursday. So we do a little talking, but they've always been good to me, and I've always loved those guys. So they've given me a few instruments out on the road, loaners, and we've had a good relationship so far.
So what is it about, a Les Paul or a 335 that appeals to you more than, you know, let's say a Telecaster or a Strat or, you know, something of that nature?
Yeah. I love Fender too, man. I own some Telecasters, you know, I keep them in the house. I own quite a few Telecasters, but, Cody Tate, our other lead guitar player, his uncle, before he passed away, he gave me my first guitar that was it's a 94 Les Paul Standard. And it's my main guitar that I still use. It's my baby, you know. But I think just right then I knew that was me. And then every time I touch something else, my hands just don't fit a Fender or any other guitar the same way. It's part of me. It's in it.
So you like that chunky neck, huh?
I like the chunk, yeah. And I like my back to hurt a little bit whenever I play.
Yeah, well, you know what? If you're playing a 335 or an SG, your back's not going to hurt.
Not at all.
There's something special. So what would you say is your number one? What's your number one guitar?
That's my black 94 Les Paul Standard.
What kind of pickups are in it?
I've got a DiMarzio Super Distortion in the back, and I've got a can't remember what I got in front now that you said my pots just went out and I was replacing it. Hell, I can't remember right this. I'll hit to you in a minute.
No, you're fine. I was just curious because I really like their burst buckers. Yeah, I love the burst buckers.
I've been looking at some cream tees. You ever used the cream tees?
No, I haven't used them, but I've played a guitar with them before.
Really? Billy Gibbons had a one of those whisker buckers. I'm interested. I think I need to try one.
Yeah. Well, if he's using it, you know it's unique. So.
Right.
Yeah. So, are you a guy that goes straight into the amp? You use a lot of pedals? You got a rack system?
No, I don't. I don't use a lot of pedals. I've got a. I use a reverb, and I use an echo as a slap back, and I use a red snapper distortion that's for leads only. Everything else is, it's pretty much straight into the amp.
Yeah.
I use a lot of volume pedal, but no crazy effects. It's pretty much straight in. I don't use a compression pedal either, which is kind of abnormal for a lot of dudes, especially slide. You know, it can get pretty hard for the engineer out there, but he's an idiot with me. So, no compression. So everything, I'm pretty much running a Les Paul through a Vox AC30.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's nice to keep it stripped down like that. So when you go into the studio, are you using that same rig or are you using?
I have before, but I land around the boxes. I've used 61s, you know, 64s, 63s. I'm all in the 60s every time we go to studio. It kind of just, it fits my sound. And I think it kind of stands out that our listeners will know which one's myself and which one is Cody, the other guitar player. They can kind of distinguish who is who, you know?
Right. And so is that something you guys purposely set out to create that difference in your tone, or is it something that was natural?
It was natural at first for me to go lean towards the Vox. Whenever we see, you know, whenever that gear's in there, of course I gravitate towards it because I'm actually endorsed by Vox. So, I've always been straight on board since I first played them. But as soon as I plug in and play through it, everybody's just like, well, duh, you know, that's John. It's pretty clear. That's his tone. We don't really need to venture too far. We'll just unplug from one Vox and plug into another Vox and see which one of the four we need to use for the song, you know?
Yeah.
So my whole thing in studio ends up landing around guitars. So I'll run through, you know, 61 SGs and specials, and I'll run through, you know, 6 to 8 guitars through the same amp and try to find who's got the right tone for the song. Right. For Cody Tate, the other one, you know, we try to, he runs Fender mostly through everything, but he's pretty versatile. We'll move him amp to amp to try to find what he needs to find to land around the tune.
Right. Because you guys purposely try to make it so that you have a distinguishing different sound.
Yeah. For sure. We do need to be distinguished because we do have 3 guitar players, you know, Cody Cannon, the lead singer, he plays a rhythm guitar too, you know, most of the time. So whenever we're cutting a track, we do need to, everybody needs a separate deal on purpose for sure.
Right. Yeah. Cause it would really stink to all have the same tone playing the same G chord in the same G form.
The same amp and the same guitar.
Yeah. You know, it's like, why bother? You know, why? So what is it like for you working in a band where you do have so many guitar players?
It's cool, man. We're a guitar driven band. Like you said earlier, you know, we're based off of that. We've always been that way, guitars out front, and we work really well together, but we've lived together, we grew up together.
Yeah.
You know, Cody and myself, we've known each other since we were 3 or 4 years old playing ball together. So it's like, it comes pretty natural whenever we go to create music. You know, there's not a lot of bickering and fighting and BS, you know. We've been through that growing up as kids. We've had our issues before, but they're very easy to get over. You know?
Right. So you guys, there's no ego or no issue like that. And if there was, you just go out back and duke it out, right?
And handle it pretty quick. And whenever we wake up tomorrow, man, it's all good.
Yeah, there you go. That's
cool. Of course we get into it, but it's not.
Yeah,
that's it's cool. It's not a, you know. It's not going to do anything. We got into it before when we were 10 years old or 12 or 15. Right. It didn't really make it, you know?
Right. So I saw that you have a single out. Is that correct? You got a single?
Not yet. We just finished recording in January. But well,
I heard one on Spotify earlier.
Where'd you get out?
Yeah, it was, where the heck? I'm sorry. Sticking and Moving.
Oh no! That's a different guy. But they did just release that. Yeah, that's a Reed South Hall guys. Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was you guys.
No, they did just release that though.
That's crazy because when I pulled up